Well, welcome to Uncontroversial. We are here with Dave Gilpin, Rick Emerson, talking all things. What did I write down here? Unprovocative ministry wisdom for everyday ministry challenges.
Brilliant.
Unprovocative ministry wisdom for everyday ministry challenges. We're doing our best to keep it clean, Dave. Keep it free from opinions, free from just too much stuff that's not clear in the scriptures.
Yeah, that's right. There's a lot of opinions out there, right?
Yeah, there is.
We just want to make our whole role is my life statement is to take people from the lowlands of doubt to the highlands of faith, right?
I like that.
So I've got to get rid of any kind of cynicism, get rid of any kind of sarcasm, and just even if some of the things I say aren't right, they're said with a heart that wants the very best for people. I'm not trying to pull down and destroy. I'm trying to actually create something.
It's cool. I've heard you talk about, and this is where we want to go with today's episode, the 7-year cycles in church life. And you obviously pastored an amazing church in the UK for close to 30 years. And you've come up with this, well, not if you've come up with it, but you've out of your observations of your time there and just church life in general, you've come up with these really great things. Talk to us about that.
Oh, gee. Well, let me cut to the chase as well and just say that there was friction with us at the end of 4 times 7-year cycles, which is 28 years, right? Mm. We're left on the 29th year. And so I'll give you reasons, what I think are reasons for that. But let me start with is just the belief that the church runs on 7-year cycles. And it's all approximate. And also it's just a theory. Yep. Like the theory of evolution, right? Even though a lot of theories,
I'm sure it's
not
better
quite
than that one. There's lots of theories in the world.
There's a lot of holes in that one.
But this is like not just a theory. It's about going, okay, how can somebody who's going through their own pastoring journey learn from the wisdom of someone who's been there and done it?
I would say the first 7 years, I would call that the experimental years. And let me take you through the experimental years. This is the first 7 years after a new pastor takes over a church.
Yeah.
After a collapse of the history of the church. You know, there's either been a crisis, a new person's taken over. Generally, it's generally when a new person's taken over. Hmm. So it's the experimental years. These are the BMX years, right? You hop on your BMX bike.
BMX.
And you drive around the estate. You drive north, south, east, west, and you spy out the land, like what God said to Abraham, you know, go for a long walk. And I just think that it's the permission to fail stage. I think it's the adventure stage. And I think that there's people in people's churches that are listening right now that won't let the pastor experiment. And I just think that you need to get rid of the fear of failure. I think the fear of failure is a curse on churches. You know, in actual fact, my theory is most churches are too successful. You know, they it's like Ed Sheeran's reduced his friendship group down to 4 people, right? Why? The most successful songwriter in all of history, outside of Elton John, 4 friends. Yeah. And it's because people have let him down, because he's rich. He can't work out why people actually would become friends with him, right? Mm. Mixed motives. And so he's a very successful relationship person with 4 people. And I think that churches, you know, a church can be 50 people, and it's been 50 people for a while. It's highly successful with those 50 people.
Yeah,
and I just think that our role is not to be legends in the lounge room, but legends in the land. So we're here. We've got to be free to fail. And I think failure, because Ecclesiastes 11 verse 6 says, "Sow seed in the morning and sow seed at night. You just don't know which will succeed, whether this or that or both does equally well." So there's an approximation to do
good
with
wisdom in that.
Yeah, to do with the way we. It's an approximation in our walk with God. You know, otherwise it's a complete dictatorship. And I think he wants us to grow. And a toddler grows by falling over. You know, that's how he learns to walk.
Yeah, I mean, I'm encouraged when I read, you know, the creation story of Genesis. And when God tells Adam to name the animals, he doesn't then correct him when he gets it wrong. No, no, Adam, that's not an elephant. Mm. You know, no, that's not a tiger. Like this is not that. Mm. You know, he puts things in place and then he gives freedom to mankind to co-create with him.
Yeah. And even that was an adventure, naming the animals, because it doesn't seem that important.
Hmm.
Right? But it's hey, you have a go.
That's good.
You have a go, right? And you know, and I think experimenting's good. And I think that being failure is not that bad. And in actual fact, the road to success is filled with the potholes of failure anyway, right? And no one's got the Midas touch.
What is failure? I mean, failure is the inability or the unwillingness to get back up again once something didn't work the way you wanted it to.
No, that's it.
So if, as long as you're willing to get back up again and back it up and own the mistake or whatever it is, like, that makes us human.
Yeah, that's right. As long as the captain of the ship that's been shipwrecked isn't still beside the shipwreck, as long as he's back at the harbour building another ship, then that's good. And I usually use the example of Iceland in 2016. Iceland played the European Cup, the Euro Cup, right? And they lost against France in the quarterfinals. So, but that were they losers? Because the Icelandic team came from a population of 300,000. Yeah. France came from a population of like 68 million, right? So even though they lost, they were the most successful team in the whole of the history of Europe.
Mm.
And I think it's the same for people who are listening, that we often think, oh, I've failed. And yet you've probably, no one comes from the same rocky outcrop or the same toxic valley that you've come from. So don't call it a failure. You know, you got to the quarterfinals, you know. And so, you know, it might be going through a difficult patch, but don't call it a failure. Or just get up, brush yourself down, and let's go again. And I think that's the first 7 years of a church.
The mercies are new every morning.
Mm. Every morning.
You need it sometimes.
100%. So that's the first 7 years. So I would say that the first 7 years are like this, right? It starts with inspiration. It then moves to activation. Inspiration moves to activation. So people hear the word. It's a fresh word. Yes, I'm in, right? I'm fully activated. And that moves to delegation. And, you know, teams are created. Everyone's excited about it, right? But I think after that, there is friction that comes into every relationship. And I think that in year four with difficulties in relationship in year four, it then often moves into derision in terms of talking about people badly behind their back, not solving issues, not taking your brother aside, feeling bitter, feeling embittered, feeling embattled, whatever.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of
frustration. Yeah, starts
a lot of derision. And then in year six, it leads to division. So you find, and I have not found a church that doesn't have a mini church split within the first seven years.
Yeah.
And so the mini church split is on the, in this example, is on the 6 year marker, right?
And would you say that's because the whether the people or the group that gets isolated or feels like they're being isolated isn't giving space or permission for the leader to fail, for instance? They're just they're demanding perfection. They're looking around at other places. They're, you know, spirit of comparison, whatever it might be.
Yes. So in other words, sometimes they've been sold something in the first couple of years, right? In that you're selling the vision, right? Yeah. But by year six, it hasn't come true. In actual fact, what are we doing here, right? So you've got buyer's remorse going on.
Mm.
They bought into something and now they feel, what have I bought into?
Can't see it happening.
No, that's right. You've also got the people who come in the early days that are praying for a little revival. When revival happens and people get saved in that and you start a maternity ward up, the whole focus moves off them and moves on to the maternity ward, right? Mm. And so they don't like that. No. Yeah. There's a sketch from a show in Britain called Little Britain. I don't know if you've ever seen it, right?
Lots of British references, like football, which I call soccer.
Yes.
I'm very Australian, Dave, so.
Yes, but in this Little Britain, there's a sketch in it called The Only Gay in the Village, right?
Mm.
And this guy's in the village, he's wearing pink lycra, right? And he's having a fabulous time because he's the only gay in the village, right? So he's in the village pub. He's the only gay, right? And then
he stands out a lot.
Yes, and then another gay arrives, right? And you think, oh, he'd be really happy, wouldn't he? Because now there's two gays in the village, right? But instead of being happy with the guys turned up in blue lycra, right? Because it's all caricatures. He then hates him and says, you know, I'm the only gay in the village. So he spends the rest of the sketch, the 1 minute enjoying himself, then the guy arrives, the next minute trying to get rid of him, right?
Yep.
And I think that's what happens in church life. I think it's a universal principle that if you're the only guitarist, you're happy when another guitarist arrives. If you're the only darling check-looking-like person and another darling check arrives, you're unhappy.
Right? Competition starts to kick in.
And I think that, and also spotlight. We love the spotlight. Mm. That's why the real, in most churches, the spotlight is on teenagers and young adults, right? The moment you get married, you move out of the spotlight. But I think it's quite a good thing that you can only mature when the spotlight leaves you. It's what you do when you're not under the spotlight that really matures you. Mm. And so I think you feel like no one cares about me anymore.
Yeah.
Because you're not actually in the Premier – you've slipped from the Premier League back down to the Championship, which is do I belong?
It's interesting because I find just instinctively in pastoring people and trying to build the teams the way they should be, there's been moments over the last, 5 years for me where I've looked at it and said, okay, here's a person who's been highly successful. They've thrived in that particular area. And I've had to make a suggestion to go, hey, would you consider taking this kind of role, which is actually more important, but in terms of, bringing stability or bringing consistency to the whole of a particular team maybe. But for you, it means that you're not going to be the upfront person, or you're not going to be the person in the spotlight as much. And to this person's credit, I'm so thrilled because they've brought such a great strength to our team. Yet they might, they don't say this, but someone might look at them and say, oh, they're not doing as important a job as they once were. Yet what it's done is it's given space for a next generation, a new generation of people to come in and have opportunities. And I've often said to people that, God gives you gifts, right? God gives you giftings, but those gifts, they're not for you. They're there to help you connect in with the life of a church. Mm. And so if you're not willing to give that away at some point and mature past your own gift, there was a time in my life where I was never going to be anything but a keyboard player in the church. And I haven't done that for years because there's a sense where that's what I thought I was going to be. I'm happy to stand behind a pastor. I'm happy to serve in that capacity. But God goes, no, that was your gift. That's how you connected. That's how you felt like you belonged. Now I'm going to move you on.
Yeah. And that's hard for people because they get their identity from what they do.
Yeah.
But you have to move from being, say, the guitar player, the piano player, to being the piano teacher. That's a maturity step. So you're raising people up and you're being now the coach rather than the actual...
Be a replicator.
I think so. I think that's where it should happen. So you do get a crisis. You do get a shearing. And we had that in our church when we first started, a shearing on year five, year six mark, right? And I think it's an unstoppable thing, right? Because what you're left with is you're left with people that have now been through their first fire.
Yeah.
And so they've had their holy moment thinking, what shall I do? They've decided to stay in the church, right, when the church is not popular, where there's friction and then where there's things spoken badly about people that are untrue, they've decided to stay. So now the church is actually better in a way because it's more unified with true unity, right? And then year seven is your Selah year. So it's the year where everyone pulls back and retracts back into their personal walk with God. Mm. So it's an isolated year, right? But from that dusty hill comes inspiration. So now you move into the second 7 years. How do you start it off? Fresh inspiration, right? Mm. So the first 7 years were experimental years. Then the second 7 years are your empowerment years.
I'm writing it down. I like this. Empowerment.
So the empowerment years are interesting, right? Because the empowerment years, I could say consolidation, but it's not exactly true. What you're doing is you're creating the culture, saying this is the culture of the church.
Yeah.
Because beforehand you had McDonald's uniforms in there, KFC uniforms in there, Hungry Jack's uniforms, Burger King and some of the uniforms in there. You had Red Rooster uniforms, Chick-fil-A uniforms, had all this. And so you had a whole lot. So no one's actually wearing the same uniform. Everyone's still quite individualized. But this seven, there's a culture. This is the culture, right? Mm. And I think that the systems. This is the systems.
Yeah.
This is the culture. This is the mat. This is the way
we do things around here.
Yeah, and this is the manner. Mm. This is how we manage the place, right? So now you've got something that is working well. And it's growing again, and it's something that can be replicated in other places, right?
Yeah.
But at least you've got something there, and I think that's the second 7 years is the empowerment years. Now the third 7 years, I would call it the industrial years.
Okay.
Because the industrial years, this is where the church has has it's found its freedom, it's found its voice, it's found its verve, it's found its vibe, it's found its ethos, it's found its values. You with me? It's yeah. a strong unit now, right? And I think that again, if it remains a strong unit but doesn't multiply, I call it industrialism, it could be the multiplication years, right? If it doesn't multiply, it becomes a little selfish. Plus, we're here to raise up leaders and raise. So leaders have been risen up during this time, right?
Yeah.
Everyone's raising leaders. So now we're going to have to move into multiplication. And so the multiplication years is high activity.
Yeah.
It's burning the candle at both ends. It's we're going to work like dogs here, right? Because we've found the formula.
Works.
Yeah. And the formula works, right? And now we're gonna industrialize and multiply and see this whole thing happen, right? And the after that happens, then there has to eventually be a settling. So the fourth 7 years is, I'd have to call it the influential years, right? But you could call it the settlement years. But the influential years is quite good in the years of rapid growth and rapid industrialization, rapid multiplication. At some stage, it has to reduce because you have to consolidate. You have to, and so I think in that now is in the final 7 years of it's the fourth 7 year period, which is influence, right? I think that now your influence, you're now touching the seven mountains of society. So you've got, so doctors feel empowered because they're in the medical world. Your teachers are in the education world.
Yeah,
so
you're not just influential in your own four walls. No. Now you're empowering people to be influential in their world.
Yes. Yeah. And then you've got, then you've picked up a lot of missions work. So generally a church doesn't grow taller beyond 21 years.
Hmm.
Now there's going to be exceptions to that, but generally, you know, a church reaches a certain size because people say healthy things grow, but not necessarily vertical.
Mm.
Like often it's then horizontal. You know, like a church, like a tree generally reaches a certain height, but then it drops seeds and it drops nuts and
thickens even.
Yeah, where, it yeah. thickens up. So I think that a lot of churches reach a certain height, but their influence in India increases, their influence in the educational department yeah. increases. And I think that's the influential years. And I think beyond that, there's an even a statesman-like influence of a church. It becomes state, I know it's a slightly sexist kind of statesman-like, but, you know, it's got a certain yeah. status and a certain, it carries an influence. The people in it carry an influence. And I think that's for the body of Christ, and that's for the city and for the community.
Yeah, it's almost like you've done everything that one particular generation can do yeah. in that generation, and so now it serves as a signboard or a billboard, if yes. you like.
And that's why generally a pastor who's just say they've been with the 28 years, generally a pastor will leave after the 28-year mark, right, and then take on a role that has more oversight to it, or take on a role that is more influencing society, influencing yeah. community, right? If they do stay in the place, like for you here, right, and then you come in and then you get risen up as the
lead pastor
yeah. right? I think then you've got two realms happening here.
Yeah.
You've got a greater influential realm that's overseeing you, and then you're back in the experimental stage, right, where you're trying lots of things, right? And I think that's a brilliant combination. For the mistake I made in that, you know, I felt like our time was up after definitely on 28 years, right? It started to cool down, let's say on 25, 26 year mark, right? Is that I'm a pioneer and my nature is to pioneer, right? So I'm loving year 0 to 7 because I don't mind making mistakes, right?
You love creating things. Yes. You love seeing what.
Yeah. Yes, and so then I'm a little annoyed with year 8 to year 14, right? Because the second 7 years is consolidation and yeah. it's systems. I don't like systems, right? But it's you with me? And now I'm excited again. I'm back in the industrial age, right? So so for us, we sent teams of young adults from Sheffield. We sent them to all kinds of places. You know, we sent a team of 7 or 8 to Manchester that got taken over by my assistant. It's now the largest church in Manchester, I would say. And then we sent teams to Leeds, teams to Newcastle, teams to Birmingham, teams to London, and then teams overseas. I sent 6 or 7 young adults to Frankfurt, to 6 or 7 young adults to Ghana, to Accra, 6 or 7 young adults to Malaysia. I'm loving this because this is industrialization, right? I'm loving it. The problem with that is that if you keep on doing it for too long, then people do eventually start to feel used.
It becomes downward. Yeah, you're pushing stuff up a hill all of a sudden. It's like
people are okay while the momentum's going, right?
Yeah.
Because people are paid little, right? There's a lot of volunteerism, right? And it's all hands on deck. It's all hands on board.
It's the busiest time, if you like, of that generation. It's the busiest years of that generation and the most effective.
Yes. So it's like saying, hey, everyone run as fast as you can, right?
Yeah.
Well, you can only do that for 7 years. You can't keep doing that because people have to build families. They have to get paid better. Volunteers have to be looked after better, right? So I would say, because I never dropped back into the next stage, which is influential 7 mountains, right? We did influence some, you know, have a large charity associated with us, right? But I was still in pioneer mode, right? Mm. And I'm still trying to take cities for Jesus. And my locations of our church were starting to localize. So a number of them wanted to be their own
congregations.
And now I'm thinking, oh, Dave, we're not trying to build an empire here, right? We're actually trying to
create churches that have the ability to stand on their own.
I mean, that's what you want. Yes, and I think that sometimes when you have multi-sites, the problem with multi-site, when you've got it, you think with multi-site church, you think, oh, I could never give this church to so-and-so because one of the multi-sites, right, because they're too immature. And yet the system creates immaturity because they haven't got final financial responsibility or final responsibility for anything, right?
Yeah.
And so it actually creates miniaturization. It creates a pygmy effect in the life of the church, right? So I should have – and it's because we pioneered multi-site. We're the first people to actually, I think, do it.
Mm.
And the whole cycle of it, that we got to the stage where now I should have released a number of congregations, you know. So I think I'm trying to take cities for Christ. The congregations are trying to firstly localize in their local cities, and then our main base was trying to localize within a city. So I'm in war now because I'm here to take cities and I'm not here to settle down.
When you look back on, and you know, the reality is you don't get another crack at another fresh 28 years for your life. Do you know, most people are going to have one go at this. One of the things that I observe and did years ago as a younger pastor starting up, watching the great churches of the world all had leadership that was in place for this kind of length of time. Mm. You know, there is a lot of churches out there that you know, by unfortunate circumstance, or whether it be through, you know, boards or who knows whatever reason, but pastors don't get the opportunity to stay and work through the seasons. Do you know what I mean? Or sometimes the pastor themselves. I mean, I've had friends even that have already, you know, even in their 40s, they've already pastored 2 or 3 churches because they see themselves in a particular light. And they'll go, oh, I'm good at pioneering, or I'm good at church planting, or I'm good at, you know, I'm good at this particular type of ministry. And then they kind of go into a place, do that for a season, and then extract themselves out. Mm. And I look at it and go, oh, is there not some level of responsibility on the leader, if they can, to try and become what's appropriate in the season of the church, if we know these things are true or at least a healthy cycle to try and aim at?
That's true. That's quite – it's a huge effort that for some – the normal person isn't that versatile.
Yeah.
So if they're a systems person – they'll come into a church when the system – generally it works. It unworks itself, right, because they come into a church to be the systems person.
Mm.
But the church is thinking, who are you?
Yeah.
And so he's actually back in the experimental stage, right? So it's quite difficult there when you do come into a church because you don't know it. They don't know you. You have to build trust, activate them, find out who's who, find out who's truly a stone.
Yeah.
A foundation stone, who's not.
That's so interesting.
It's quite difficult though. But for me, I am a pioneer. And so I disliked Christmas greatly when I was running a church because I'm not a Christmassy person, right?
Mm.
I'm a pioneer. I love January because this is in the Northern Hemisphere because you're starting again.
Yeah.
You know, I love January, February, March. Didn't like Easter because then people are away on holidays, you know, and then summer. Dislike summer because everyone's on holidays, which is in July and August, right? But then September, October, November, December, brilliant months.
When it comes to the seasons in Life Church, we were talking about it a bit before we recorded. I mean, I can speak a little bit of that, but you, I actually thought, what do you see? What do you observe? And is there questions you would throw at me that might help somebody else? Sometimes it's easy to have somebody ask you. Sometimes it's easy to share off the back of my own experience. Oh. But I've done that a few times. But
yeah,
what do you see?
We've got two levels here because you've got your senior pastor,
yeah,
and who's become more a gift to the city and a gift to the nation and a gift to, because I know you're building this massive new building, right? Mm. So that's a city influential thing, right? So he's in that realm, right? Very rarely does someone build a new facility in the first 7 years, right? Very rarely.
Totally, yeah.
So I think at the same time, you're there suggesting staff, you've got a degree of liberty. This is a BMX stage, right? Because you're trying out different styles of preaching, you're learning your craft, pastoring, right? So, and the gift is you've got someone who can clean up after you, which is a bit of a gift, right? So in actual fact, it gives you a bit more license to come up with.
Well, it does. And what's crazy is often Ash will say, you know, I'm your greatest supporter, which he is. You know, if there's certainly early on in the transition, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, maybe some people didn't like some of the things that had happened or the way that I'd communicated something or whatever. And they would go, because they were used to him for so many years. Mm. And it wasn't necessarily that it was good or bad. It was just the fact that it was different.
Mm.
And he was able to placate those situations and just bring unity to leadership.
Mm.
Like that wouldn't happen if we didn't have a sense of overlap. I mean, I think you've talked about the 7 years of maybe even an individual leader, seven year, 28 year season of an individual leader. But for us in Life Church now, this is a really beautiful, interesting season where we have a season of overlap. I think the most common question that we get asked is, oh, is there a transition arrangement here? Is there a date in mind of when, you know, something shifts or whatever? And it's an interesting question because we think, as humans, we think very hierarchically. We think very top down, and someone has to own the senior role.
Yep.
You know, we've had some beautiful analogies to try to explain to people what this is. But more than anything, it's a little bit like in a marriage. Do you know what I mean? Like where okay, who gets the final say on a decision in a marriage?
Mm.
Well, if one person is consistently overriding the other person having the final say, you don't have much of a marriage.
No.
Yet biblically, we might look at it and say, well, you know, the wives need to submit to the husbands or whatever it might be. But if that's actually exercised on a consistent basis and there's not an ability to create beautiful agreement and recognition of each other's strengths in the relationship and an ability to release each other to be amazing in your own amazing way, you know, because Ash and I are different skill sets, different gifts, different personalities, yet we do have the same spirit and we're both committed to trying to build something and model something for our church and maybe, you know, for the wider kingdom that says, hey, this doesn't have to be about one guy calling all of the shots.
No.
In fact, if we can build width to leadership and we can, you know, bounce off each other relationally and build beautiful unity and agreement amongst ourselves, it helps the church continue to move forward so that you don't get to the end of, you know, a 28-year cycle and things need to crash or things need to break in order for them to shift.
No, that's right. It's rare. What's happening here is rare, but it is the granddad, dad, son type of configuration, isn't it, where all of them have a voice And there's unity amongst, there's generational unity. It's the Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob that's going on here.
Yeah.
And all of them have unity. I think it's rare though that someone like Ash would stay around. That's rare. It's a great model.
I think it takes somebody special to be able to do that.
Yes, it does. Because
there are certain things that he has intentionally, not because he felt like it in a flesh sense, but intentionally, instinctively, spiritually understood he had to let go of, so that I could assume the role of lead pastor. You know,
yeah, that's
and,
right.
And he will often say to people, like, no, Rick's not like some glorified senior associate pastor who have just got a different title. No, he's the lead pastor of this congregation. Make no mistake about it. You know, and so he champions me on, he cheers me on. I think for anybody listening who's a senior pastor, maybe, or maybe you've been in ministry a long time, you know, we've had conversations with people like, oh, where do you find a person that would want to come along? You know, I think there's two folds there, or two lanes that we could talk about. The first is you've got to know what it means to be a father.
Brilliant.
You know.
Brilliant.
And what it means to release and to cheer on in the next generation. But you've also, and I can't speak to that. You could probably speak to that a little bit more. But I think it's of so much importance to be a son. To be a son is to not be the prodigal son who expects, and look, the prodigal son, beautiful story, but I look at that family and go, how much more blessing would have existed if the prodigal son had come to his senses, not in the pig pen, but if he'd come to his senses before he ripped his dad's farm in half.
True.
So the father's waiting at the gate. He sees his son coming. He embraces his son. Beautiful. What a beautiful end to the story. What a reconciliation story, forgiveness, the father heart of God, all those things. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. But what if he came to his senses before he left? The generational blessing. See, he comes back, but half the estate's gone.
Gone, yeah.
It's wasted on the prostitutes and wild living and all the other things that it's wasted. It's gone. Mm. So there's reconciliation of relationship, but there's not generational blessing.
Yeah.
And I think what we're trying to build here is a sense that both of us have to intentionally make space for each other.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I am continually trying to build Ash back into the life of the church in the areas where, you know, he's not far from my lips. He's not far from the conversations that I'm in. I'm constantly spending time, you know, conversating. I mean, we've just come back from, a team retreat up the hill where we are, you know, we're discussing the future together. We're looking at what God has for us. We're crafting language together. We're being super intentional about the things. And we're just waiting on God together.
Mm.
You know, one of the things that came out of our time away was actually it might look from the outside to be indulgent, but it's important to withdraw out and to just go sit at the top of a mountain.
Mm.
And you might go, I haven't got time for that. But if you don't have time for that, you don't have time to hear from God. Who ultimately is a God of seasons, who is a God who will recognize, he knows these things before we even set foot in them.
Yeah.
And so he then starts to define those things and we hear his heart. We pick up the heartbeat of heaven for the next season.
Yeah.
And I said, he's a God of seasons more than he's a God of formulas.
Yeah.
And I think we've got everyone has to understand that. Otherwise it doesn't work. If it becomes about my kingdom or his kingdom or your kingdom or that person's kingdom, this is his kingdom.
Mm.
Seek first. Mm. His kingdom.
Well, yeah, I'd say you're an empowered son rather than an empowered server.
Yeah.
And I think that I think when I look at a lot of churches, there's a great level of servanthood in the churches but not a great level of sonship in the churches. Yeah. And I think sometimes people are retarded in their sonship because the senior leader doesn't bring them into the fullness of who they actually are.
Mm.
So I've got to take my hat off to your pastor.
100%.
And also believing for your pastor's voice to be the future, his voice to be heralded, right? Because we need, I think there was an expression, when the fathers appear, the sons appear. Or when the sons appear, the fathers appear. But someone's got to put on the identity.
Which comes first, the chicken or the egg?
Yes, but if they put the identity on, like I've deliberately put the identity on a father.
Yeah.
I've put it on, right? it might not feel 100% natural because I put it on, then suns
by appear. Faith.
Yeah, then by suns faith. Appear.
Yeah. See, what's interesting about that is I think that, you know, in particularly in our context, in my relationship with Ash, it's so important that as a son, if you think about a natural family, and if you've got kids and they're teenagers, you're still guiding them, you're still leading them, you're still telling them where they need to go, you're picking them up from wherever their parties, whatever. There comes a point, though, where they leave the nest and they go off and do their own thing. And as an earthly father, if you continue to parent them like they're 12 years old when they're 25, then something's dysfunctional about that relationship. We understand that instinctively. And so as a natural analogy, for a adult son and, you know, an older father to have a relationship as adults, the adult son must invite his father back into the relationship.
Brilliant.
I can't expect someone to father me as an adult if I'm not instigating that.
Brilliant.
So if I'm expecting a father to open a door for me, but I'm not first inviting them into my life and to speak to what they can see about my life and to prepare my heart for what God wants to do through, you know, the journey for Ash and I is to, hey, Ash, you know, speak to my heart. And there's times he goes, oh, man, I don't want to, you know, don't say everything. I don't want to, you know, seem negative. No. At me. What do you see? What do you say? What's going to hold me back? What's the wisdom from the next 5 years that I need to know? What's the wisdom from 20 years time? What's this look like? And as a son, I have to continually invite him back into my world. Now, does that mean that I enjoy all of the advice that's given? It doesn't necessarily create a party in my flesh. Some things that he'll say to me at times, I've had to wrestle with a little bit and go, okay, I know he loves me. I know that he wants the best for me. How do I build that into my life? I don't think that's an issue for me, or I don't think that's something. But then all of a sudden, if I humble myself and go, no, I'm gonna be a son more than I'm gonna be right. I'm a son first, and I'm working out my own, you know, sense of right and wrong second to that. I'm just gonna submit to that journey. It unlocks the father in him.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly.
So when you go, the fathers rise up, the sons will appear. I almost see it the other way around.
Yeah.
I go, when there's young men and young women who would say, I'm willing to invest myself in this senior person above me and invite them back into my life with complete humility, understanding that, you know, I mean, what adult, if you've got a young man coming to you saying, hey, Dave, like, you literally have full liberty to speak in my life,
right.
And you know he's not going to get offended.
That's right.
You know that he's committed to the journey that he's asking you to walk. Are you going to withhold that wisdom?
No.
Of course you're not.
No.
Why? Because as you get into that next season of your life, that's what you live for. You live to impart who you are to somebody else. And so I think sonship is, we understand being a child of God, God's a perfect parent. Can you be a son or a daughter to a man or woman who's senior to you that's not a perfect parent? They might say some things at times that is difficult to digest or doesn't make sense to you, but can you look past that and continue to value that relationship more than you value the opportunity that relationship might bring you? Yeah,
it's brilliant. It's a great model, you know. And again, you, speaking to a weakness in my life that I was head down, tail up, you know, work hard, burn the candle at both ends, right? And I missed out on that mentoring side where I became a son to, even if you become a relative, you know, like not just a son to a father, but son, but you know, you've got couple of uncles,
yeah,
couple of fathers, right? Whatever. Just the attitude's the same.
We're using, you know, for the sake of the analogy, we're using myself and Ash, but it's not just Ash. I think this is a principle that all of us can learn from a little bit. And go, you know, to be a disciple of Jesus is to be a student of Jesus. To be a disciple is not just to Jesus. I think you can be a student to anybody. I mean, I would try to even position myself to be a student to Dave Gilpin. Do I understand everything Dave Gilpin's going to say? Do I agree with everything Dave's going to say? Well, it doesn't matter whether I agree or not. Stop looking for right or wrong. Just go, what can I learn? What can I glean? What can I receive?
Yes.
And what am I receiving now that I don't even understand that God has given me for the next season that might be 5, 6, 7, 10 years, 20 years down the track? I think you can learn from even the nastiest person in your congregation that abuses you on the way out of the door and tells you all of the things that are wrong with you, and that's why they're leaving the church, you can still learn from that person as a pastor. You know, you've got to get rid of the vitriol. You got to humble yourself. But you can hear. Is there some truth in that? You're terrible. You're unapproachable. Well, filter that and go, is there anything in there that I can take on board?
Yeah.
Well, probably.
Yeah.
You know, when none of us are perfect.
No.
So
good.
Yeah. Anyway.
Gee.
What are we even talking about? What was the topic? I don't even remember the topic. The seven stages. Yeah, we've done the
seven-year cycles.
Yeah, this and is I just think, how it's working in our world.
I think also, like in terms of me missing the chance to switch from pioneer back to settler or back to influencer, I think that it was the same every year was the same for me. In the Northern Hemisphere, I loved January because you could be you're quite reflective, melancholic, and then I loved February, March, April, because you could be quite choleric, and then I didn't like Easter much because there were on holidays, and then loved May, June. That was quite good, back to choleric, but then everyone switches to sanguine. It's a very difficult period when everyone's on holidays, right?
Pastors are like freaking out.
Yeah. Yeah, but then Northern Hemisphere back in September, halfway through September, October, November, December, power months, right?
Yeah.
Then December switches to phlegmatic, so you just have to chill for a while and then you're back on. So there's certain periods of the year that I like more than others.
Yeah.
But I'm not a typical pastor. When Christmas time, I'm not that happy. Easter time, I'm not that happy, right? Even though the significant events in the life of the church – everyone's distracted during
you're battling different forces.
Yes, holiday times. I'm not a holiday pastor, right? So once you recognize that, you can delegate well, stay with your strength zone, fiddle around with things that are your non-strengths to a degree.
Yeah.
But a lot of that needs guidance. A lot of people need guidance. They can't work that out on their own. And for me, I'm working it out too late. But for others, they need someone to say, hey, just check me out. Just where do you think I fit in the whole regime? What's my best season? You know, where's my best growth time? Keep going, because then we can just cut that out because we'll finish now, right?
Yeah, yeah. It just appeared.
Yeah. What's your great growth season? What's so? I think the idea of bringing a few people in.
Yeah.
I think there's nothing better. That's the lesson I've learned.
Yeah,
is isolation creates inner strength, but also it lacks the fullness of wisdom.
Yeah,
and you know, you're sitting on the other side of the table with the fullness of wisdom because you're coming from an Abraham, Isaac, Jacob situation. So I take my hat off to it. But we're here to help people listening to us.
Totally. And we haven't worked it all out, by the way. We're still trying to work it through and I think in some ways God is leading that journey for us. We're both open to it. But I'm grateful that even you sit here and even you saying, oh, you know, I didn't get that right. I mean, that's going to bless somebody because I would never have picked that. Do you know what I mean? You're saying that my season over there finished and, you know, and we would have ended up back here either way. But there'll be people listening to this saying like, oh, man, you know, I've missed it or I should have done this or I should have turned left where I turned right. And I think, you know, God's a redeemer. He grabs situations that we, you know, I mean, far out. Look at the Old Testament guys. Do you know what I mean? Abraham creates Ishmael and yet he still becomes the father of faith. Like all of these things, you know, the failure is not making a mistake. Failure is not taking advantage of it in the next season and letting God work all things together for the good, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think, I mean, I'm so grateful for you to sit here and go, okay, I got some stuff I could tell you about. Mm-hmm. And you're making the most of that in the next season. You might have some internal regret about that or wish I'd done it differently maybe, but we don't see that from the outside. We just see a man who says, you know, like you said, no brake pedal, no rear vision mirror, I'm going full ahead and the rest of us are blessed by it. And I think that's a cool way to live.
Oh.
Mm, awesome. I think that'll do.
So good.
Episode 3 done. Hope you guys are enjoying what's going on. What do we call it? I can't remember. What are we?
Seven-year cycles.
I just think 7-year cycles, man. If they're 6-year cycles, 7-year cycles, we're not trying to nail the calendar, but we're just going, God is a God of seasons. And if that's you in this previous season, hey, let the mercy of God, the goodness of God surround you in the season, and let him minister to you and turn the next season into the season where you have some wins. Hey, awesome. All right, that's it for us. This has been Uncontroversial.